Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Grant Napier Show.
This is the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
This team, there he is again. My goodness.
Doug Christie, what a pass. Men against boys.
The Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
Crouches, gets a step to the baseline. Right with the right hand. Oh, boy.
Now, Grant Napier.
One preseason game in the books, and already Marvin Bagley is a bust. He can't play. What are the Kings doing? I'll tell you, it is mind-boggling to me, absolutely mind-boggling to me, the type of comments that come across social media and other forms of communication after one preseason game. Mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. Doug Christie, how are you, sir?
Who in the hell said that, Napier?
Oh, my God. Just, I mean, it's everywhere. It's unbelievable.
Let me tell you, I was front row and center, and I liked some of the things that he did, especially on the defensive end of the floor. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say he doesn't have things to work on. Yes, he does. But look, not a bust. Get out of here.
Stupid.
I'm not believing that one.
Dave Yeager is going to be on with us either at 4:30 or 5. Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox at 4. Ian O'Connor, who's the author of Belichick, at 5:30. Ian Eagle, NFL on CBS at 6. But let's talk a little bit about what we saw last night in Phoenix. And give me your overall thoughts, and then I'll follow you up.
You know, I liked what I saw. I thought that they started slow. I liked the pace at which they began to play with, and that was started by De'Aaron Fox. I think that he needs to continue on that type of pace. I think that you saw Willie Cauley-Stein do what we're hoping to see from Willie Cauley-Stein. Now it has to be consistent. And Yogi Ferrell, I think, was an IV shot in the arm when the Kings definitely needed it. You know, listen, Grant, like Buddy Hield didn't play as well as I'm sure Buddy wants to play. This is the first game. You're getting out there. You're kind of working on some things. All in all, though, I like some of the things that I saw, and it starts with De'Aaron Fox. I'm going to start right there. Some of the moves and the things that he was doing, it baffles me because I'm like, oh, boy, it just now needs to be at that consistent level. There was a time where the Kings went up and down the floor a couple of times. I heard Coach Yeager call out a play, and De'Aaron Fox, he went the other way with it. And I could tell it's slow, and I'm going to take it over right now. And I can't remember if he got fouled or whatever happened, but that just shows me his ability to take over a game, and I want to see more of that out of him.
You know, I want to get back to Marvin Bagley. The book on him coming out of Duke was he was a terrible defensive player. And after watching Summer League and watching last night, right now I think that's the strength of his game. I've been very, very impressed with how he plays defense. I love the way he communicates on defense. I think so far that has been a bright spot on him. I'm not even worried about him offensively because the gift is there. But he has already surpassed my expectations of what he may be able to do defensively. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Listen, you and I talked on air yesterday right before the game, and you said if you were Marvin Bagley, what would you do? And I said if I was giving him advice, I would say just go do the things that you do and everything else. Work on it on the side, but it'll come to you. And the one thing, Grant, to your point, defensively, I love the fact that he is engaging. He doesn't run from it. He's swinging at balls on the back end. He's blocking shots against the backboard. He's going up and rebounding the ball with two hands. Those are all the things that normally you don't necessarily see from rookies. They want to score. They want to score. And he's going to score. He's going to figure out ways to put the ball in the basket. Still, I think right now, he's trying to do it with brute force and things that he did in high school and college. He was able to physically dominate. And now he's going to have to figure it out as he goes along. But I would agree with you. Defensively, I like what I see from Marvin. There are some things he needs to work on, but the effort and energy is there.
The Kings in the offseason signed Yogi Ferrell after a deal fell through with Dallas. And I don't know if you were off the day I had Mark Folliwell on. I can't remember, the TV voice of the Mavericks. But he came on and raved about Yogi and was saying how lucky the Kings are to have him. I'm not going to blow anything out of proportion on one preseason game, but he was the best player on the floor last night. And here's the deal about Yogi Ferrell. He just flat out knows how to play the game. He's got a lot of moxie to him. He is a guy that shows up to work every day. I really am happy with Yogi Ferrell being on the Kings.
Listen, you can play him in multiple positions. He can play the point guard. He can play the two guards. You see, he can shoot the basketball, Grant. He's very feisty. I like the fact that he gets after it. One thing that I just truly, truly love and enjoy from him is he sees a play called from the opposition. He turns right around the same way I used to do to the bench, looking over at one of the coaches, and he's calling it out, meaning that he is engaged in the game, and then he's passing that information onto his teammates. That is fantastic stuff.
All right. So if you have any thoughts on the Kings' first preseason game, we'll take your phone calls. Listen, I get the fact that we are a sports talk show and people want to call in and voice your opinions. And I'm fine with that because I've been doing this for 25 years. And many of you that are listening now, you've been on this show listening and we've been going back and forth and voicing our opinions for decades. I'm okay with that. But let's put the brakes on already with, you know, either superlatives that are off base based on one 48-minute preseason game, or to the contrary as it relates to Marvin Bagley. That is just stupidity. It
Grant,
really is.
Grant, if someone calls in and they say that Marvin Bagley is a buster, he can't play basketball, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Now, will the young player develop? I tend to think that he will. First and foremost, he has the palate. He has a grand scheme, meaning he's 6'11". He jumps out of the gym. He's athletic. He has a drive and desire to be great. He gets in the gym. He stays in the gym. He's the first one in, the last one to leave. You pair all those things together. Now, he has things that he has to work on. I'm not going to say that. I'm more of an optimist. I like to look at the shinier side of a player because I see the potential and I've been in that position. And a lot of times we see players that come along like him, Grant, that have all the potential, but they don't work, and it never works out. The one thing that you can say about this young fella is he wants it, he stays in the gym, he asks questions, he's always fully engaged in the game. I like that out of him, and I think he's going to be all right.
All right, let's talk some NFL football. At the beginning of the season, I had the Chiefs either third or fourth in the division because of the unknown of Patrick Mahomes. There is no more unknown about Patrick Mahomes. If you held an MVP vote through 4 weeks of the season, either he or Jared Goff would be the MVPs of the league. That's how good Patrick Mahomes has been. And what he did last night in the fourth quarter was absolutely unbelievable. How about rolling out to the left, switching hands, and throwing the ball to Tyreek Hill with his left hand, with his left arm, to get a very crucial first down to keep the drive going?
You know, Grant, that is in and of itself impressive. But you know what is super impressive to me is the fact that he felt the pressure on his backside. He knew exactly how much time he had, and he knew Von Miller was right there, switching it to his left hand. Big time throw, and without that completion, and then you take it. I mean, now the clock did go down to zero, but that 30 whatever it was yard completion. Right. I mean, these are just big time plays from a player that a lot of questions, but now you can understand what Coach Andy Reid saw in this young player because he looks to be special.
All right, baseball tomorrow, the American League, the A's, will have it for you right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Bob Melvin announced that Liam Hendricks will start the game. Obviously, it's probably a one-inning deal, and I'm a little surprised that the Yankees are going with Luis Severino as opposed to Jay Happ.
They want to go.
Well, I'll talk to you. All right, I'll tell you exactly why. I'm in New York right now. I'm at WFAN. That's where I'm doing the show from. And
okay.
So I got here very early because I wanted to talk with some of the talk show hosts here.
Right.
And a couple of the people that I talked to told me that they are already thinking that in order to beat Boston, they need Happ to go and pitch two games. And I'm like, whoa. Why are they thinking about Boston? They got to win tomorrow. And they all agreed, you're right. They were all surprised that Severino was announced to start the game. Now, Severino has got the ability to be brilliant. I mean, he does have that stuff.
Right.
He has pitched better as of late. However, I just think in a winner-take-all game, you've got to go with the guy that is pitching the best right now. And the guy that's pitching the best for the Yankees right now is Happ. And I think that the Yankees, and again, I'm not going to discount Luis Severino. He's got the ability to be great, all right? We've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't been great lately. Happ has been, I don't want to say great, but he's been very good. So what happens if Severino gets into the first inning, gets a couple men on, Then what? What happens if the A's get a couple of runs early? You know, well, I mean, I'm saying, what if I don't have a crystal ball?
Grant, what rings to mind is a game one versus the Minnesota Twins last year, and he doesn't make it out of the first inning. That's right. That's what rings to mind. Go ahead.
No, I want you to talk to me from a professional athlete's perspective. Don't you think, in a way, that can help him, because that was his first playoff start. He knows what to expect, and the Yankees ended up winning that game. Give me your thoughts on that.
That's exactly where I was going, Grant. There's two sides to this coin. It's do you allow your demons to come up and grab you, or do you take the knowledge from the failure, like we're talking about with the Sacramento Kings, these young players, do you take that knowledge and you build on it? And I personally think, Grant, Severino's done that, because he showed after that outing, Grant, coming back this year, he was lights out at the beginning of the season. Whatever happened at the halfway point and what he's done between now and then, and you've talked about the fact he's been better as of late, this is a moment for him, in my opinion, that if he rises to the occasion, you guys could have some serious stuff on your hands.
And if not, he'll be booed off the field
at
Yankee Stadium tomorrow, and I'll be booing him too. But I won't. You know what? I won't be. I'll tell you right now, I won't be booing him. I'll be booing Aaron Boone. That's who I'll be booing, because he's the one that's making this decision. And listen, it's easy to sit back and criticize a manager. He knows his ball club a lot better than I do.
Right.
And so, you know, listen, I'm going to wait like everyone else. I'm a little bit surprised. I'm not shocked. I'm a little bit surprised. And I'll tell you what else is interesting. Mm-hmm. I spoke to a guy 5 minutes before he came on the air here. And he said he thought that Tanaka would be the second guy to come into the game if Severino gets into trouble. And that really surprised me.
That was going to be my next question, was, is Hap the only one that is off the table to pitch in this particular game?
No, nobody's off the table.
Everyone's on, but you're going to be looking at Hap down the road. You meaning that, say Severino messes up in the second inning and all of a sudden gives a couple hits and they're going to go to the pin. And so you're telling me that Tanaka is going to be that next guy coming in?
Yes. That's what I hear. Now, what happens if the game goes 15, 16 innings and Hap hasn't pitched? Well, of course he's going to pitch. I mean, you know, again, I don't think any team, same thing in the National League, you know, with the Cubs playing the Rockies, you can't be thinking about the next game. There may not be a next game. You know, if you have to use all of your pitchers, if you have to use every one of your starters, then so be it. You know, you can't worry about the next series. There is no next series. All right, forget about that. The season is on the line tonight in the National League for two teams, and tomorrow night on the line for the American League. And I bet you the A's are pretty comfortable knowing that Severino is starting. I think they're okay with that.
Yes, I would agree. I think that they're going to think that they can get to him. I would say that, does this play into the Yankees' favor from the standpoint that they have the ability to go with Severino, who can go, you know, a whole game, but then Tanaka can do the same thing? So if Severino doesn't deliver, but he gives you maybe two or three innings, you have the ability to bring Tanaka in, who could maybe go into the seventh.
Okay, I'll tell you what I think could happen, and I'm going a little overboard with this, but I'm trying to make a point.
Okay,
if the A's win tomorrow, and they use 10 pitchers, or they use whatever a lot more than normal, because they're going to go and use their bullpen to pitch one inning here, one inning there, instead of a legitimate starter.
Yep.
If the A's are able to win tomorrow, and play well, doing the same thing, although we had Ray Fosse on, and he thought if the A's won tomorrow, they would have to go to conventional starters in the next series. But I'm just wondering, if the A's can use this formula, and we saw Tampa do it this year, they were the first team to do it, and the A's followed suit. If the A's are able to beat a team like the Yankees with their lineup, with this type of pitching philosophy, will more teams, Doug, look at their staffs and go, you know what? Maybe that's the new era of baseball.
Great.
And then there's the domino effect of that, Doug. Fans don't want that. It's going to slow up the game. The games are now over 3 hours. The games are going to go 3.5 hours, 3:45 with all the pitching changes. Fans don't want that.
But fans want wins, and if your team is going to get wins, then fans will, at least the home fans will live with that. Grant, sports is all about copycat. It's a copycat league, from West Coast offense and football to now what we're seeing with Golden State and small ball in the NBA. It happens time and time again. Once you see a modicum of success, they copy that, and someone else tries to do the same thing. So to answer your question, I would say, I would think that all of a sudden bullpens are going to be the big it thing. Starting pitching, if you got some, great. If you don't, there's a way around it.
I believe if Luis Severino gets out of the top of the first clean, I think he's going to be very, very good. I think his biggest inning tomorrow is going to be the first three outs based on last year, based on what he has done in the months of July, August, and September, where he has not been nearly as good as he was in the first half of the year. And I just got to believe, big stage, the butterflies.
Right.
If he's able to go three up and three down, look good early, then I think the Yankees are in a very good position.
Okay.
But I don't know if he's going to be able to do that or not. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, this takes me to my next question, because last time Severino was his outing, he and Gary Sanchez were like not on the same page. I mean, they had issues. Who catches for him? And if it is Sanchez, how much confidence do you have in that combination in this type of game?
Well, It's a good question. When I'm looking, if I'm looking at the A's and the Yankees, and I'm looking at the big stage of Yankee Stadium, and I'm looking, I know I'm answering your question in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at this 1-9-inning game at the Bronx, okay,
mm-hmm.
The A's have relished the underdog role all year.
Absolutely.
Okay, they have been a team that nobody talked about until really the calendar turned to August. Nobody gave him credit. Well, you know what? Seattle's going to catch him. Well, you know, okay. Well, they were in first place for a while. Yeah, but they can't do it in September. They're going to fall apart. They got injuries, blah, blah, blah. Then September comes, and yeah, they haven't played as well, but guess what? Look at how many games they won this year. Look at where they're at, and look at they love the fact that nobody is picking them to win this game tomorrow. That's exactly where they want to be. They are loose. They are a underdog, and their mentality is, we don't care if we're at Yankee Stadium. We want to be at Yankee Stadium because nobody thinks we can win. I think the A's are in a perfect position here. I really do.
Man, the one thing that, for Yankee fans, it has to be a bit unnerving is the type of bats that you see. Now, the Yankees have probably more bats, but the point is, this has been the A's MO, the ability to hit the long ball, the ability to stress pitching and what have you. That would be one area that, if I'm a Yankee fan, I'm thinking, oh boy, these kids are going to come in here. They're going to be swinging these bats, and Grant, they should be loosey-goosey and ready. This is going to be one heck of a game, man.
Again, you look at the Yankees lineup from top to bottom. Per average, there are a lot of guys like Gary Sanchez, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at his average and you're like, good Lord. Okay. But guess what?
Yeah.
He's also a guy that on any pitch can hit a 450 feet.
Yep.
So you have to be so careful with pitch location against a power hitting ball club. Listen, Yankees just broke a record for most home runs ever in baseball. Now that's a little deceiving. The ball's juiced, and we get that. But
yeah.
still, this is not with Didi now showing that he's back. Aaron Judge is back healthy. You know, when you look at Stanton, I think the guy that's got the most pressure on him in the Yankee lineup is Stanton.
Absolutely,
huge money, first year, big stage. You know, I'll tell you this, Ian. You know how New York is. You know, if we get to the ninth inning and the Yankees are losing and Stanton comes up and strikes out, they will annihilate him. They
yeah.
will boo him. It will be an ugly scene. I'm just telling you, it will be an ugly scene.
Grant, the same thing, and we talked about this before. This was the type of pressure that Alex Rodriguez had on him because the contract was huge. He left Seattle, went to Texas, signed that big contract. Then he comes over to the Yankees, and he hadn't won anything. He hadn't done anything similar to what we see with Stanton. And you're right, the stage is set. The stage is big. He must deliver. Now, just striking out, base hit, it might not be a home run, but it has to be something timely that rings the bell.
Amen. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. All callers and guests appear courtesy of the Fire Wings Hotline. Try one of their delicious 21 flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. So if you want to talk about the Kings last night, NFL last night, look ahead to NFL Week 5. Or if you want to focus in on baseball, again, the Cubs and the Rockies. And then tomorrow, the A's and the Yankees will have that game for you right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Somebody asked me earlier today, do I think that the A's are going to be nervous being on the stage? No, I think the A's are right where they want to be. I really believe that. All right, let's get a call or two before we get to the break and start with Tony. Hello, Tony.
Yeah, hey, I've been waiting for this, and I'm a lifelong A's fan, and yeah, we are liking Severino getting called, and I listen to everything because you know everything in New York. I don't, and I've been trying to read on it, but I know exactly where you're coming from. My whole thing is I think – the A's rotation, you know, with this starter thing that they've recently done. This isn't a Tampa Bay version of that. where Tampa had no pressure, and they started that at the end of May, for crying out loud, or even earlier, I think. So it's a little wobbly, and I think Boone is betting that it's going to be a slugfest, and it's not going to work out for the A's. And well, but I don't like it. I agree with what you're saying. I mean, I would be pitching Hap, because if I don't win, I'm not in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. You got to go with the guy that's pitching the best right now, and that guy's Hap. You know, it's always easy to second guess a manager, you know, after the game. I'm second guessing him before the game even starts. No, because you know what? I hate people that call up after the game and tell me what happened. Tell me what's going to happen before it happens. I'm telling you right now, I would go with Hap tomorrow. I'm just saying, that's the guy I would throw to. Now, I know people are going to go, yeah, but you know what? Look at their right-handed lineup. You know what? I don't care about their lineup. Their guys hit the ball to all fields. It doesn't bother me. Righty, left, I don't care about that. That is just... Give me the best pitcher in a winner-take-all game. Give me your best pitcher. I don't care if he throws lefty, righty. I don't care if he throws overhand, underhand. Give me your best pitcher. Right?
That's a New
Hey,
Yorker.
By the way, I wanted to put this out there. Since nobody likes the A's, all right? And that's all I heard all year. Oh, gee, the A's don't get ratings. Oh, what a bunch of crap. Do you know that the A's ratings on TV this year were up 69%?
Whoa.
All right?
Hold on.
That's right.
Hold on.
The Oakland A's on NBC Sports California, okay, were up 69% compared to last year.
69? You sure
That's
about
correct.
That? Not 6.9?
I am reading it right now from Susan Slusser, the outstanding Chronicle beat writer, and the press release. Again, 69% compared to last season.
Hey, well, let me tell you, Grant, it's well-deserved because, you know, starting out being, and I said this before, being 11 games behind my M's, and then all of a sudden they start creeping, and Chris Davis is just night after night. The hot corner, they got it locked down, and before you know it, man, they're in it, and then, Grant, they take a step towards Houston, and that was huge, and
yep.
Everyone said, they're going to fall off. I have to give them credit. They didn't, and here they are on New York stage with the opportunity to shock the world.
Chris is next on Sports 1140. Chris, welcome.
Hey, Grant, how are you?
Good, Chris.
Hey, so I wanted to talk about Bagley, and I think you guys are right, you know, that it's unfair to judge him off of one game or a few summer league appearances. But, you know, as somebody like you guys that I think, you know, their emotions live and die with the Kings, and we're going to be with this team, you know, regardless of whether they win 20 or win 60 year in, year out, you know, the thing that I want to know, and I think you guys know, and whether you're able to tell us, I don't know, but did the Kings front office and coaching staff expect Bagley to be struggling this much early, or is this a surprise to them as well?
What do you mean he's struggling this early? What are you looking at? What do you mean he's struggling? What are you basing that on?
Okay, I'm basing it on this, Grant. I watched him play every summer league game. He's got a beautiful-looking shot, and he made his first three he shot in the summer league. And then there's probably been five or six air balls. It, you know, it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look how it did at Duke. So I think it is fair to say he's struggling.
Listen, there's some technical things with his shot that he is going to have to look at. And I always talk about breaking down a shot. You got to break it all the way down. You can't do the whole shot. If you're working on a golf swing, you can't do the whole swing. You got to take it in pieces. And that's going to take him a second to get that part of it. I would personally, as a fan, if I'm a fan, I would put that part aside. I want to know that he brings it every night. Is he getting up and down the floor? Is he doing all those things? That part isn't going to come. Steph Curry didn't become that great shooter overnight. It takes time.
Hey, I'll tell you this, and again, I'm you can believe me or you don't. It's up to you. I and like Doug, I'm around the coaching staff on a fairly regular basis, okay? I have not had one coach, and there's a lot of coaches on the staff. I haven't had one coach come up to me and tell me anything disconcerting about Marvin Bagley. None. And I mean that. They're not worried about Marvin Bagley. They're just not. They're not worried about him.
And that's great to know, and that's what I wanted to know. Because as a fan, I'm reading everything after the game. I mean, I know how I react as a fan, nothing more than that. And you know, you want to see a 20-point game where he hits a couple threes and makes some dunks. And when you don't see that, you know, given how much we've been through as Kings fans, we want to know why.
Hey, listen, I get that. I totally get that. But can we at least, I mean, can we do this? Or maybe we can't do this. can we at least give Marvin Bagley the same amount of time as we do with other rookies before we come up with these type of evaluations? He just turned 19. Okay, he should be a freshman in college this year. Can we watch the process? And listen, this process may be erratic all year, okay? I always go by the 3 year. I know you don't want to wait 3 years, but, I mean, you have to.
Grant, you know, and to the caller, what would worry me as a Kings fan is if he was doing that type of stuff and we heard about him out at the club and he was up all night and he didn't come to the gym and he didn't work out. This kid watches tape, he studies, he gets in the gym, he comes early, he stays late. You give me that type of talent and that type of work ethic, I'll take it anytime.
Hey, I appreciate the call.
Thanks, fellas.
Hey, thank you. You have a good afternoon. We'll be right back. This is Sports 1140. All right, hope you are having a good afternoon. The Kings are back in Sacramento. They will be in L.A. Thursday to take on LeBron and the Lakers. We take your phone calls at 339-1140, 800-920-1140, and we check in with Jerry. Hello, Jerry.
I wanted to talk a little baseball today, Grant. You were talking about pitching and how Tampa and Oakland are going to this new kind of formatted pitching, well, like an inning a pitcher, basically. I think it might catch on, and my reason is that these batters today are so talented that after they see a guy twice, they're nailing him that third time. I could see the starting pitcher role begin to diminish and everybody going to this, you know, in the future. They've got nothing to lose. They might even save a few arms along the way. And I had a follow-up question, Grant, and maybe, Doug, you might be able to answer this as well. Why are there no left knuckleball pitchers anymore?
Well, I'll answer the first one. I don't agree with you on that. I think if you're a top-flight pitcher, if you're a true ace, it doesn't matter if they see you 10 times in a game, all right? If you are, you know, Jake DeGrom, if you are Justin Verlander, if you are, you know, Madison Bumgarner when he's pitching the way he normally pitches, if you're John Lester, there are a lot of pitchers that doesn't matter. Now, I understand that, you know, there are a lot of pitchers that may be true of, but they're also your top-tier pitchers in baseball. You think Max Scherzer, you know, you think guys have an advantage of Max Scherzer their third time through the lineup or Jake DeGrom? No, they don't. So
no, I know.
You know what? I mean, Jerry, you know this. If you've got a stud, all right, if you've got a Clayton Kershaw, and again, I know Kershaw is not a real good postseason pitcher, but my point is, if you've got that guy, you ride that guy in a game like tomorrow, and neither of these teams have that guy, and that's why they have to go to their bullpens. And again, you know, if Luis Severino pitches real well, I still don't think Severino will make it out of the sixth inning. I really don't. Now, as far as knuckleballers, I don't think they're teaching it. I don't think, you know, it's all about the gun. How fast do you throw? You know, kids coming up now, whether you're talking about Little League or junior high or high school, look at all the arm injuries there are in youth baseball. Guys are they're taught to throw hard and see what the gun is registering. Yeah. Knuckleballs aren't taught anymore.
Yeah, great. Could you imagine seeing a knuckleball pitcher before or after a 100-mile-an-hour pitcher? That would be crazy for those guys.
Sure would. Hey, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks.
All right, let's get to some more phone calls. And Dave, hello, Dave.
Hey, Grant. Hey, Doug. How are you this afternoon?
All right.
Good. My comment and my question. First off, I was excited with what I saw with Yogi Ferrell, and a couple things. I'd be interested in your guys' view, contrast of his strengths and weaknesses relative to Fox. And the other thing I'd be interested in is a lot of the analytics these days are done to see, you know, what pairs or triplets of players play well together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious how you would see Yogi paired with Bogdanovich versus Fox paired with Bogdanovich. It seems like Yogi has a lot of strengths that would mesh well with Bogey's strengths. And I'm curious your thoughts on that. I'll take it off the air since my connection's not great.
I'll answer the first part of that, and I'll let Doug go with the rest. Okay. I need to see Yogi Ferrell play more with my own eyes before I can make too many concrete observations. I only saw him play, you know, four times with Dallas, and I'm not watching the Mavs play every night. I'm not an expert on Yogi Ferrell. I do love what I've heard from the people that did watch him play every night. It's the same thing with Bielitsa and what Jim Peterson told me, the TV analyst for the Timberwolves. He said, quote, I love the guy. Mm-hmm. That means a lot more than anything that I can see based on watching a guy play a handful of times. But, Doug, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, to the first point, when you look at Fox and Yogi, for instance, there really isn't a comparison. The only thing that Yogi really shoots the basketball, you can see he can shoot it. De'Aaron Fox, he can get hot, he can shoot it, he can get to the hole, he can defend. Yogi is a heck of a player, a little bit undersized, but he can still score. Bogey can play with just about anybody because of his skill set, Grant, and that means that he would set up a guy like Yogi for wide open jump shots. He would read him and be able to play with him, but then he does the same thing with Fox, but he's going to do it in a different way. He's going to understand his speed. He's going to understand the ability for Fox to back cut. Bogey is a special player because he makes everyone around him better.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, he is I think he's got the highest IQ of anyone on the floor. He sees the floor. He knows the game. You really appreciate how talented he is when you watch him play on a nightly basis. And again, Doug, you know this, and you probably have a different perspective than I do because, you know, as a player playing 82 games a year, you know, you didn't play a team more than four times mm-hmm. unless it was the playoffs. But after you're in the league for a long time and you were going against Kobe mm-hmm. and you had all those series, you probably knew every tendency, and now it was just, you know, you knew him. That didn't mean you could stop him or vice versa. It takes me a while. You know how you always say when you see a guy play every night, you get a completely different perspective than watching him play four times? We always say that. You know,
yes.
I mean, I couldn't tell you a lot about Bielitsa. I couldn't tell you a lot. But when I hear someone like Jim Peterson who watched him play every game of his NBA career, or when I have a guy like Mark Folliwell come on the show and talk about Yogi Ferrell, and Mark's watched every game that he's played, that resonates with me a lot more than me just watching him play four or five times a year. That to me is what I go by.
Yes, because the people that are around you and see you every day can speak to your tendencies and different things. We'll see someone on one night, they'll have a fantastic game, and you might not see him again for 2 months. Then the next time you see him, they play terrible, but you hear someone say, no, 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 that first yep. time you saw him, that's really who they are. Or they might say the second time you saw him is really who they are. That's why you depend on people who are around them, around practice, and see their work ethic.
Now, I don't want to contradict myself, but I am going to make this opinion based on one game last night. Oh, boy, they have something in DeAndre Ayton, huh?
Oh, boy. Yeah, he's a big guy. I like his competitiveness, and I like his competitive edge. The ability to – how about the square-up, knockdown 16-foot yeah. jump shot, Grant?
Smooth.
And not afraid to mix it up at all. I saw – I believe it was Frank Mason. It might have been Fox went in, and I could hear him say, get that out of here. So, you know, there's some spunk, and there's something to him. You pair him with Devin Booker and, you know, Josh Jackson improving and what have you. They have something to build upon.
They sure do. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, if he stays focused and hits the gym and is committed to being great, he could be great. I mean, you can just kind of look into your crystal ball and envision him in a couple of years. But he looks like there's no surprise why he was the number one player taken in the draft. Now, again, I don't want to go the other way on this and, you know, anoint him as a Hall of Famer based on one game. But what I saw last night, the skills are there, Doug. Like, he's got the framework of someone that could be really, really special in this league.
Yeah, and he's got size, athleticism. He's got some agility to him, the ability yep. to run the floor. One thing that I saw that I was really impressed, because they really don't teach this anymore, is rim running. He was running right down the center of the floor. He was trying to get right in front of the rim, turning around, using his big body early, meaning that as we're transitioning and it's a fast break, let me get to a spot where I can most exploit the defense, then I'll step yep. out and pick and roll, maybe hit a jump shot or whatever, but I'm starting from the inside and working my way out.
What, in your viewpoint from watching the game last night, what were the struggles? Why do you think Justin Jackson couldn't get on the board?
You know, Josh Jackson, these are some guys that have elite size. I think when you look at Justin Jackson, and I've said this about him many times, offense can't dictate the way that you play. You got to use your athleticism and what have you to still contribute to the game. He has the ability to do the same thing. And when I was watching him on defense, Grant, he doesn't quite use his hands yet. Michael Cooper, the great defender from the Lakers, once taught me when I was there, these are weapons, and you have to use them as weapons, meaning swiping at the ball. Not in a way that's going to get you in foul trouble, but understanding that you want to create a mirage that shows the defense that the offense that this isn't there. These are little things that Justin Jackson can improve upon, which Grant is going to get him steals. It's going to get him in an open court. And when I say that, he missed a wide open layup. Scow missed a wide open layup. And you know why, Grant? Because they didn't go to dunk it. Go to dunk the damn thing. Then you can change your mind.
Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox, coming up at 4 o'clock. Your phone calls next here on Sports 1140. Big day for the city of Seattle. Gary Bettman and the National Hockey League recommending an expansion franchise to Seattle. It appears to be only a formality when they vote on December 3rd and 4th. So Seattle is going to be getting NHL hockey, and to me, it will be only a matter of time before the NBA follows them into that new building.
Hey, what do you think? Seattle Totems?
What do you think? What do you think? Give me a prediction.
Well, yeah, I'm going Totems, but I don't think they're going to go there. Somebody who
called
us with
Totems?
Well, that's because that was the old school name of the junior league hockey team.
Okay,
Grant. And it was
right.
Just a.
I don't like the Totems. I want something else. Give me a better name than that.
Boom.
The Seattle Boom. Come on, man.
I don't get paid to do that part, Grant. I'm just throwing ideas out there. Come on.
It's good. It's great, though, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, that is – and I will say on top of this, that, listen, the NHL is hot, man, and they saw what happened in Vegas, and
yep.
I think that is a market in Seattle that if they do it right, and I think that they will, hockey will do well there in Seattle. I really think it will.
You know what is happening tomorrow, correct?
What's that?
It is the opening night of the National Hockey League.
Oh, boy, Grant.
How about that?
Back.
You know what that means? When we're at work in studio, well, one of those TVs is always on hockey.
Right? As long as it's the Maple Leafs and not the
it don't matter.
The
team
in New York.
We're putting them on. No, I watch all the teams in hockey. I don't care. Give me some hockey. You know what I'm saying? Give me some hockey. Shoot the puck.
Listen, man, you too much, man. You got to calm down sometimes, Nate.
Come on, Blue. Shoot the puck.
Yeah, this is
I'm sitting the upper deck at Yankee Stadium tomorrow, so I won't be able to yell at the umpires.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Did you got a field pass? You got a hookup?
No. You know what? I did – because I have to do the show tomorrow, I didn't have time to go on the field before the game. So I did get approved for a press credential, but you and I have friends that work in baseball, and so I instead opted to just go as a fan and sit in the stands, but I'm in the upper deck. And I will say this, and you know me, I'm spoiled. You and I, we broadcast games, and
absolutely.
I sit right on the floor. And all right, so I am sitting in the very last section of Yankee Stadium, out in the left field grandstand. In other words, I am going to be on the other. Where the stadium bends, you know where the foul pole is.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
If whereas the stands continue to go out, that's where I'm going to be sitting. I'm going to be in the very top, and I really mean this. Like I get so annoyed when fans call up and complain because they're not near the field near the court.
You're in the house, man.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much. Yeah. I am in the house at Yankee Stadium tomorrow. I don't really care where my seat is now. If somebody said, hey, Grant, I got a seat three rows from the field, would you like it?
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to say yes. But I am going to have absolutely no issues being at the very top of Yankee Stadium down the left field line. I don't care. I am in the building. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, it drives me crazy.
Hey,
when I hear fans call up and complain, well, gee, I wasn't close to the fielder. Shut up. Stay home then. You know how many people would love to be able to sit in the upper deck at Yankee Stadium for a playoff game or Wrigley Field or whatever? Shut up.
Yeah.
Stay home then and give your ticket to somebody that wants to go.
Yeah, somebody who wants to really be there and enjoy it. Tell them the upper deck is better than the up room. You tell them that, Grant. You tell them Doug Christie said that. You hear me? They'll
the
know
upper
what to
deck is better than the upper room.
There
okay.
you go. There you go. Enjoy yourself,
gonna,
man. Hey, you deserve it.
So I'm going to be out there tomorrow. I'm going to go, hey, does anybody know who Doug Christie is? And they're going to go, yeah, I know who Doug is. Well, he said being in the upper deck is better than being in the upper room.
I can't make this stuff up.
And then, they're going to collectively pick me up and throw me off the upper deck onto the field.
Hey, but then at least we'll see you. That's right.
Exactly
you,
right.
You get some TV time. You know that. Exactly.
And I have no chance at all of getting a ball up there. Even if Aaron Judge or Chris Davis or no chance. There's never been a ball hit that high.
Yeah. Well, you never know, Grant. There's first time for everything.
Nah, now, not happening.
Hey, listen. Someone bring it in. What do they call it? Exit velocity. Up and out of here, baby.
Launch angle. The launch angle would have to be at an all-time record. And the wind would have to blow in straight out to left field at about 50 miles an hour.
Hey, whatever needs to happen, it's possible, man. You're in the house.
Hey, you know what? I've always said this, not to go on a tangent here. When I was a kid growing up, my dad, we had tickets for games, and we never, ever were near the ice or the court or the field. And not once did it ever cross my mind, how come we weren't sitting closer? Did it care as a kid? You didn't care about that. You were excited to go to the game. Now, I always hear parents, well, I couldn't get good tickets. You know what? Go home and tell your son or daughter that you're taking them to a game. I guarantee you the first question is not going to be, oh, where are the seats at? They're just going to be thrilled to death to go.
Grant, let me tell you, I remember this guy's name. I don't know how it just comes to me. His name was Mr. Sorensen. He was a teacher in grade school, and he was the first person that took us to a game. Guess where? It was at the Kingdome. Guess what level we were on, Grant? The 300 level of the Kingdome. Yep. You know how far you are away from the field at a Mariners game in the 300 level? I don't even know if I could recognize anybody, but, man, we were in the house, and we had a blast.
That's all that matters, and you remember it, and it was a great day, a great experience, and so I'm with you. That's the one thing that drives me crazy and continually drives me crazy. You know how I'm very good friends with Chris Russo, and you know, I listen to his show every day. He talks about how bad it is to go to an NFL game. I say, hey, Chris, if it's so bad, how come all the stadiums are full every Sunday? I go, people love going to the games. You know what? I don't understand how you can get it. It's an all-day thing. You got to get there, the money, blah,
That's
blah, blah.
That's part of it.
Exactly. It is part of it. You're exactly right.
Yeah,
it is part of it.
If you are, and you know, Raiders fans, they tailgate. And even in college, Grant, when you talk about going down to LSU games and
kidding me?
Come on. That's what you want to go for, to experience and just walk around and feel the vibe and vibe out. I mean, even up at University of Washington and Huskies, when they were good and I was younger in high school, we would go down and just to be around that. It's awesome, man.
Also awesome is Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. He's going to be joining us here in just about 10 minutes, and we'll talk to him about what he saw in the Dallas-Detroit game. We'll get ready for his Week 5 assignment with the NFL on Fox. We'll talk to him about last night's game that was played in Denver and some of the other hot topics going on in the NFL and the injury bug. We talked about that. Couple of top-flight players going down, namely Tyler Eifert of the Bengals, Earl Thomas of the Seahawks, and some others. And, you know, it's part of the deal, part of the deal. I thought the officiating was horrible on Sunday. It's kind of a repetitive narrative, I guess, in the NFL as it pertains to the officiating. But you know what? It is what it is. You just got to get out and figure out a way to get it done. But Charles Davis, our favorite guest we have on every week.
Come on. He is. It doesn't get any better than that, Grant. I have to get your take, though. Last night, the play clock goes down to zero.
Should be a penalty.
Listen, they said they have one ref, and that's his job. That's his job.
Yeah.
You know, that's
as soon as he sees zero, he needs to blow the whistle and throw the flag.
He's the doorman. When I walk up, open the damn door. When you see it go to zero, what is going on, Napes?
Yeah, no, it's like the attendant at the men's room at Del Frisco's in New York. just give me a paper towel, would you please? I don't need anything else. Don't look at me. Don't just do your job. We'll be right back. This is Sports 1140 KHDK.